Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready?
Ready.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back after domestic rugby week number two. What a weekend of rugby we've just seen. So we're going to dissect it all, talk about all the stories from the weekend's rugby. I'm Tim. JB is right there.
Hello, Timothy.
Is that a sailor's outfit you got on there, JB?
This would be like a retro Sail FC top, would it not? This is Sail before there weren't sharks. No, I'll tell you what this is.
That's very, very, looks very nautical to me, Jay.
It is very, well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Because it is, in fact, nautical. This is part of my fancy dress outfit that I used for my good friend Nick Ledger's stag do.
And I
just happened to keep the t-shirt. In fact, not only have I got this one, I've also inherited Bryn Williams' t-shirt. So quite
frequently. So I'm disappointed. There's no rugby stash there. And Phil, unusually, is not wearing any rugby stash either. But good evening, Phil, nonetheless.
Good evening. Yeah, I've just been cooking and working on the house today, so a bit more casual than usual.
Oh, I hope you got more of those anecdotes, Phil.
Right, so on this podcast, as you can imagine, we're going to be talking about some incredible games in Pro 14 and Gallagher Premiership. Really, some absolutely belting matches.
The Prem this week. I mean, actually, I say the Prem this week because I've not really followed much of the Pro 12.
Pro 14.
Sorry, Pro 14. But the games on Friday night were rather exciting, weren't they?
I was going to say, let's touch on the Pro 14 because Phil's proud Ulsterman and JB's beloved Benetton are the two teams sitting top of the Pro 14 table.
That's it. The absolute boys, that's why.
Absolutely astonishingly as well, if you kind of followed the Ulster scores up to 79 minutes in both games, you would probably not believe that they would be unbeaten right now.
So my theory is the Ulster fans aren't particularly happy with this because I don't think they like to win. I think they like to be like the plucky underdog.
In fact, gallant losers.
Yeah, I bet they were cursing it when Cooney kicked the last second penalty.
No, we like to win at home mostly.
Only at home.
Because it makes it a difficult place. We've played twice at home now, so it is quite good to get those two wins. But not from what I've seen, not amazing performances. But you're kind of rebuilding parts of that team. Some new guys come in.
Kurtzier fit and running over people.
Hang on. Let's not get carried away with Kurtzier. Who was the real star of Friday night's game?
Cooney.
Who was the real star of Friday night's game?
Oh, are we talking about ex-Sale Sharks Will Anderson?
What a guy, eh?
have you seen the Gilroy try?
No. Talk me through it.
Just unbelievable pace from about 60 yards out. Goes inside, outside the fullback.
Well, he was very, very promising until not so long ago. Like, he was the future of Irish rugby on the wing, and now you hardly hear of him.
Yeah, not as much. He has got some defensive frailties, and he got he didn't come out of the court case of the year last year in the best light.
court case of the year.
Yeah. Although he came out better than some.
Yes.
But yeah, he looks to be back. So he was suspended following that. Mm-hmm. He now looks to be back to his best. But yeah,
is there any chance of him going to Ireland? I mean, is it going to take a whole swathe of injuries before he gets called up?
Honest answer is I'm not sure. He's never really been one of Schmidt's men because of those defensive frailties. Mm. Schmidt would take a more solid back line than having the attacking potential.
We can talk about this in more depth in a bit.
We can, yes.
There's a couple of big stories that have happened in the last week since our podcast.
Yeah, do you hear about podcast. The... Do you hear about the LSH results, sorry?
Yeah, that
is that
one.
A... Talk H,
first win of the season.
There you
50
go.
Odd points put on Grand Old Club LSH. Thank you very much, boys.
A sad state of affairs for the mighty Liverpool St Helens.
Or is it a good state of affairs for the even mightier Disney
Talk
H?
So I guess I should Phil and I should start with a slight apology for talking down the prospect of Matt O'Connor being sacked after one game.
I told you.
We laughed at you for the 10th time that you said it, but you were eventually going to be right, and you were.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I knew at some point in kind of the recent and distant future that he was going to get fired or leave at some point.
Yeah.
So if I just carried on saying it for enough years, he would have gone. I just got lucky.
But we both thought there's no way on earth that Leicester, having presumably put their faith in him because he's still in a job, would then sack him one game into the season.
I mean, we did mention that quote that he said about, oh, we just needed another 80 minutes. And we said last week how damning that was on him.
Yep.
But we didn't see it coming. I guess my thought is probably would have been the right decision 4 months ago if they were going to go that way.
Yeah. There's lots of...
So do you want me to tell you why I think they didn't happen 4 months ago? I think they were expecting him to jump, basically, over the summer. And when he didn't, they had to then sort of put up with him. And in the end, enough was enough, and they just couldn't carry on. That's what I think.
Expecting him to jump doesn't seem like a very good strategy for running a business.
Which is kind of why I would say the other guys need to jump as well.
Well, maybe.
So I've actually got more trouble this week, would you believe it? Not something which you two know about, but for talking about Leicester's situation. And it's my opinion that Jed Glynn, Simon Cohen, have actually got the right systems, the right processes in place. I don't think head coaches should be dealing with contracts. I think there should be a rugby operation. I think there should be like an NFL front office operation that deals with scouting and signing people and salary caps. And I think they've got that right. I'm just not sure that those are the right guys to drive it forward.
And are you judging that on the basis of...
NFL teams, basically.
The decisions that they've made with the three coaches in a year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, they've gone through Cockerell, and I understand that the problem with Cockerell was not really Cockerell, but they felt forced into dismissing Cockerell because of Aaron Major, which is why they then dismissed Aaron Major. Because I always thought that was a weird one. And then after that, they landed with Matt O'Connor after doing a worldwide search. I mean, he could have worked. It's easy to say with hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they've got the right structures, just the wrong people in those structures. Jordan Murphy, I think he might be a decent appointment.
Well, it's interesting because you often, virtually always, when you get one coach who's not doing very well released, in certainly the sports that I know well, football and rugby, you get this bounce, this kind of honeymoon period where the new coach comes in. All of the things that were kind of causing angst amongst
all
the players.
All of that emotion wrapped up in it.
All the frustration comes out and they put in a very good performance, which is something that Leicester did today. But then you often see, not always, but you often see kind of not quite all of those problems have been solved. Some of them were more fundamental. Some of them were to do with individual players. And it kind of... Eventually, it'll just even itself out to a similar position.
Be an interesting one to see how it plays out. And so, I think we should. We can get into the actual game in a little bit, but obviously, a really, really strong start to his interim head coach position, Jordan Murphy. But we're all kind of in agreement that maybe it wasn't done at the right time in the right way, and could have been done 4 months ago. But
It should have been done 4 months ago. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They don't want to fire their coach after one game, but I think it was justified. But
quite a bold move if they made that decision and pulled that
just
trigger.
Just go back to Phil's point about the bounce. It makes no sense to me that whatsoever, because I think now, particularly in the Premiership, is Sale's first 15 very much worse than, say, Leicester's first 15? Or, is the very best Northampton 15 much, much worse than, say, Saracens? Probably not. So it's all about systems and processes and settled squads and that kind of thing, which is why actually I'm surprised that more teams don't lose more frequently when they change coach whilst they rebuild.
Well, it comes on to the point that you mentioned last week, which was the culture.
Yeah.
And if you've got the frustration, if people aren't happy, they're not going to play their best rugby. And if people are happy, and you saw in that Leicester game, George Ford absolutely bossing the show and doing more than just being a link man, just receiving the ball and passing, taking the opportunity to take the ball to the line, show and go. And
yeah.
The freedom, it appeared, and it might be systems, it might be processes, it might just be because he's a lot happier now, but the freedom he appeared to play with in that game is something that I've not seen
I think you're massively underestimating the psychological side of things and breaking it down into systems and processes. And if that were the case, then you wouldn't have rugby players like Thomas Waldron, for example, who... wasn't necessarily the most incredible physical specimen,
but, isn't he the ultimate
but was
system
really,
man?
Really effective.
I'd say he's the ultimate system man, because Exeter knew exactly how they wanted to play him, exactly what his strengths were.
Well, he didn't just do it at Exeter. But anyway, maybe that was a bad example. The point I'm trying to make
would be
is
Danny Cipriani, because you can't coach that, can you? Like, you know, there is no system where you say, yeah, three phase, and then Danny, do you mind missing six? You know, or that lovely little pass that he did.
You're going to get man and ball and just do a two-man miss pass.
Yeah.
Now, I want to...
Make sure he hits you in the chest, Danny.
I want to talk about that, because a lot of people are saying, oh, golden wrists, Mark II, what another...
Platinum wrists.
Another wonder... Yeah, platinum wrists, upgraded. Another wonder pass. And I just want to point out, last week's pass to Charlie Sharples was incredible. It was, as I pointed out last week, it wasn't a penalty advantage, so it was a shot to nothing, but you still got to be able to
do it.
This one, it was impressive getting the ball out just before he was going to get walloped. Again, they had penalty advantage, and he was going to get walloped. And I think rather than, probably more than praising Danny Cipriani's pass, which was quite a loopy chuck it anywhere, Jason Woodward has got nowhere near enough credit for turning that lob from Cipriani, because it wasn't a pass to Woodward. It was a get rid. Woodward turned a lob into a pass with a fingertip catch low down as he was going at full pace.
I deserve more credit. I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's one of those passes, right, that could easily have just landed the hands of the Bath player and score and they win.
Rukudugunu picks it up.
Well, no, yeah. then it would have been a penalty, so he knew he had that.
Oh, was that a penalty advantage as well?
It was a penalty advantage as well.
Right, I didn't realise that. Okay, so... but it's the fact that he does it, and he does it all the time, and they always look lucky. And you can't, you know, he's not always lucky. He's just amazing. He's amazing at what he does. England, if they get the right team and they play in the right way, it could be some force. I mean, they won't do any of that.
But again, George Ford behind a pack going forward. We talked about that.
So
suddenly he looked not. He didn't just have a good game. He was absolute class.
So there are certain tells, aren't there? So, like, you know, in the Second World War, they had weather stations up in Iceland or Greenland.
Where do you pluck all these analogies from? I love it.
Well, no, and it just tell you how the weather would be. So apparently in Iceland or Greenland or wherever it is, you'd have weather like 2 weeks in advance, so you knew what it do on the continent. And in rugby, it's a little miniature one. It's George Ford's face. And when he's got his intense face on, like he did at the AJ Bell last year.
Oh, the last game of the season.
And
yeah.
This game as well.
Yeah.
Like, he's just got this burning intensity. He doesn't celebrate his tries.
Yeah.
He's shouting at people that are doing a good job. Like, he just turns into an angry little man. And that's his best rugby.
Damn effective.
He was brilliant.
He was
absolutely sensational.
You want him with a fire in his belly, don't you?
Yeah, I was kind of... As of the opinion of George Ford now, that he is basically a guy... You can catch him pass, and he's a little bit defensively frail, and he's not going to really... We sort of know what he is. And that's because I've forgotten what a great player he is from when he was playing and under his dad at Bath, with Kyle Eastman, I might add, all those years ago. It's brilliant to see.
Now, one other story. Sorry, all this stuff we can come back to, but I just want to touch on this. And let's not get too bogged down in this one. Let's make it quite quick.
Manu Alangi to win a World Cup.
We got the perfect man right here. JB, you're a financial advisor by day. And Premiership Rugby was subject to a 50% takeover bid by a venture capitalist company who valued it half of the Premiership at £275 million, a bid which I don't think has actually been voted on yet, but is looking like it's going to be voted down by the club owners. Some of the club owners. I know Bruce Craig came out and said he's more interested in control than cash.
No. What? Bruce Craig?
But Nigel Ray, for example, seem to be positive and in favour. There's some people that have suggested they're undervaluing the Premiership and they might seek more money. But I was really interested in reading Ben Kay's article in the Times on Saturday, where he was saying now's the moment for the RFU to strike and purchase the Premiership, so that they can all work to the same goal.
What is the same goal?
A great England team and a great product, monetized. Because I suppose, like, when you look at broadcast rights, for example, at the moment, the Premiership and England Rugby are pulling in different directions. They're competing with each other.
I guess they are, aren't they?
There's some. They have some mutual goals, but they also have some conflicting goals. So, England, for example, would want all of their players playing maybe 10 Premiership games per season, so that they're absolutely fighting fit and fresh for every game in the England shirt. Whereas all the clubs want all of those England players available for every single game they play, because they're the draw.
Hmm. Yeah, So there was some chat some time ago. I mean, it was like 4 years ago. It might have been further along than that. It was when Bruce Craig first took over Bath. And the speculation, and it was just speculation, was not actually England Rugby or the RFU buying the Premiership. It was a Premiership chairman clubbing together to buy the England team.
RFU.
Yeah. Now, I think that's a more interesting prospect, because the England team would be of phenomenal value to the Premiership if they owned it.
Well, if they're both...
Well, either way, if they're both in the same pot.
If they're both aligning their objectives and pushing in the same direction, then it's got to be good.
So here's one example.
It depends. I'm looking at this because I don't have a vested interest in any one club.
Neither do any of us, to be fair.
I'm more interested in England being competitive in the Six Nations and World Cups. So from the way I look at it, I think if you have that kind of shared ownership between the RFU and Premier Rugby, and you can properly align those goals so the England players get the best combination of match freshness, match fitness and freshness, then that's got to be a good thing.
I've got one area that gets funded by the RFU currently is grassroots rugby. Mm-hmm. But again, if that was all in one pot and the whole organisation, the Premiership and the RFU or the England team, were funding grassroots rugby together, that's a mutual benefit as well, because these guys, the greater participation in rugby at the lowest level feeds into the participation, feeds into the support for the clubs, feeds into the players coming through at club level into academies. I just think it makes a lot of sense. I understand exactly what Phil's saying, and one of the issues could be the thing we quite often criticise the Pro 14 for is Johnny Sexton has played 9 games in the last 2 years in the Pro 14, 2 of them being finals.
Yeah, which is not really good enough, is it?
But if Leinster are good enough to get to 2 finals without him for all those games...
Fair. I mean, would you want the Premiership to be, you know, like the Mitre 10 or whatever it is in New Zealand? Not really. I think there is a danger of that.
Yeah.
It's also unclear to me that, you know, grassroots rugby necessarily translates into more professional players. In fact, isn't there some study saying that elite sport damages grassroots sport?
Well, that may be because of exactly what we're talking about. They're taking all these resources and they're just channeling them into the wages of elite players and not funding grassroots rugby.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure it's even their job to fund it, to be honest. I mean, obviously the RFU's job
is... Not job, but I'm saying it's a mutual benefit. So
yeah, so... Do you know what Sale Sharks do for local clubs? Because this is actually quite interesting. So if you provide from your club a Sale Sharks Academy member, you get a certain amount of cash. If he makes a first team appearance, they show up at your club with a big check, like 10, I think it's 10 grand.
Yeah, I have heard that.
It's pretty good.
It's like 10 grand each time.
Yeah. And then equally, there's some sort of development thing where they have local coaches come in. So lots of people in the Northwest know kind of how Sale Sharks play and the language and that sort of thing. And there's also something called the 100 Club, which I believe is set up so, you know, if your third team need a new set of shirts, you can approach 100 Club for funding. It's actually a pretty neat way of decentralising funding. And also it's a club taking control of the local area.
Well, there's going to be more for us to talk about on this one next week, because I think there's a vote happening at some point this week.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll just leave it at that.
I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Well, the two wealthiest owners have said no, haven't they? That's Steve Lansdowne and Bruce Craig. But from what I understand, it's not clear that all the other owners... Well, they've gone from it's not happening to let's see what the deal is, because they've all got debts to pay off.
They do, and it would give them a nice chunky little immediate windfall.
I tell you what. No, it would be priced in, wouldn't it? But Worcester's for sale, and it's got a load of debt to it. So if you could buy it for a couple of quid, I mean, you just take on the debt.
Buy it for £1.
Yeah, buy it for £1.
Take on £10 million worth of debt, and then get £20 million cash as soon as this goes through.
Exactly right.
Well, I think that's why some people are suggesting this whole talk is part of the reason why Worcester haven't been so aggressively trying to sell as they have been in the past, because they realise there could be some money coming in.
And then you pay yourself a massive dividend half to you, half to your wife. Your wife is probably living abroad. Just like Philip Green's wife. And then you exit the club.
But she's registered abroad. She's registered in the Cayman Islands.
Exactly,
like
exactly.
That's right, I've forgotten. I understand that it can be a long time between weekends. And we're, it's Sunday night at the minute. And it's a long time till Friday and more rugby comes around. So I thought I'd give you some bedtime reading. So Phil, I asked the guy who makes these if it's all right. And he said, yes, I can give you a couple of the stat packs.
Oh, lovely.
Wow.
From the last couple of weekends. So there you go. I know, fill your boots. If you want to know, I mean, did you know, for example, that Marco Mama's dad has a restaurant in Zimbabwe?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. It.
I heard one the other day. What was it? Someone's dad. Someone's mum or dad did something. Oh, it's going to annoy me now. It's got to be on. It must have been
Nick
on
Kennedy?
No, mum's an author. it must have been on
Jack,
Friday.
Jack Knoll.
Butcher. That's a
Johnny May.
Fisherman.
Johnny
no,
May.
No, that's Jack Knoll.
Yeah, I said.
Oh, sorry. Well,
I said Jack Knoll.
I was thinking of Luke Narraway.
Luke Narraway. Johnny May.
Johnny May. What's his? No.
Mum taught Ed Sheeran guitar.
Oh, yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Who played Friday night?
Northampton Quins.
Beloved Benetton.
It's someone who plays either Northampton or Benetton, and they mention what their parents do, and I'm not going to be able to rest until I find out.
And Jay, I haven't forgotten you. I got you a match programme from the AJ Bell Stadium
today. I've already got that one.
You weren't there?
Yeah, no, mine's signed. I get them in advance.
A lovely picture of John O'Ross on the front, your favourite.
From your mate Steve. Kiss, kiss. How was Steve today?
He was good. Yeah, he's always good value.
He is,
isn't
it? Yeah. But like, best DOR to interview. I think you and him have the connection. You have a connection, don't you?
Well, it was all very amicable, and Steve seemed to be in good spirits today, and he's a great character, isn't he?
How was he? Because I didn't watch the post game interview with him. So yeah. How was he? Because half time, before the game, he was in quite a good mood. Half time, he would have been in a very good mood.
Yeah.
Full time, not so much, although the win is the win.
Yeah, well, I think the last answer he gave, he said, if we play like that against Exeter in the second half, they'll kill us.
Oh.
Yeah.
Exeter would put 40 points on any team playing like that in a half. Exeter would put 40 points on them.
I do not fancy their chances against Exeter next week, let's put that way.
Well, Exeter and Saracens have just continued where they've left off.
Two games, 10 points.
Yeah. Two bonus point wins, and particularly Exeter going away to Wasps is a difficult place to go. And Exeter, bonus point, they prevented Wasps from getting a losing bonus point, although Wasps did get the four tries.
Tell you what,
it's a hell of a performance.
That Elliot Daly try was quite cool.
He looks good at fullback,
after 2 minutes. Yeah.
Is that where they played him?
Mm. Yeah.
Because he looked like he's playing outside centre, where he received the ball.
Yeah, no.
It was like schoolboy rugby.
Yeah.
Oh, cornerstone alarm.
Oh, is that the alarm?
It is.
A reminder.
Already?
Already.
Well, we'll get into that game in just a minute. You two, why don't you just do a bit of your little extra reading stuff I've got you.
Here you go. So what I'm going to do, right, is I'm going to hand you a bit of paper.
Okay.
I'll hand you a bit of paper. Okay. Think about it.
Origami,
fact, me
is this?
Bill will think about it. And we're going to write the name of the coach that's going to take over from Eddie Jones to take England to the World Cup whilst you talk about Cornerstone.
Okay, well, when you've written something down, take over from Eddie Jones?
From Eddie Jones, yeah, because he's obviously getting fired, isn't he, before the World Cup.
I thought you were going to say who's going to be the takeover from Matt O'Connor. That as well.
Eddie Jones is going to
be
next.
Eddie Jones, okay. We'll write who's going to take over from Eddie Jones.
You can have that. Don't tell us, just Me and Phil will do it, and then we'll fold it up, and you talk to what Cornerstone.
As I tell you about our friends at Cornerstone, who have an amazing offer for you. So they quite like us at Cornerstone, and so they've extended this offer through us to you to get your hands on an incredible set of the finest razors we believe you can get. You can try this. Cornerstone Razor. So it's a mail order razor company, German precision engineered. They were there before all these other pretenders that are coming on the scene with their plastic shafts. If you want to get your weighty aluminium shaft, if you want to get six precision engineered razors delivered to you in a Cornerstone presentation box, you can do that for just £4 because you listen to us. Simple as that. Less than a pint. And there you go. You've got a month of amazing Cornerstone goodness. You can see what we're raving about. And yeah, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers is where you need to go. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
egg tent at checkout. Right, don't tell me what it says on that bit of paper. Fold it up. And okay. Here's a pen for you.
Hold on. Who's taking over from Eddie Jones before the World Cup?
That's right, yeah.
Not happening.
Okay, so South Africa are going to beat England. Then Australia are going to beat England. And then England are going to beat Japan. And then they're going to lose to the All Blacks heavily. Something like that, right? At which point his position is going to be untenable. And then someone's going to open up the envelopes, which I'm going to seal these in. And we'll see if we know the identity of the next coach to take England to the World Cup.
Interesting.
So who should we post these to? Who would we want to read them out? I think posting them to David Flatman.
Just keep them somewhere secret. We trust you not to look. Put them in this mug.
No. We're going to post them to someone.
Okay.
Well, get in touch at Ruby Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah, if you want to
look. Chasers, yeah. Ruby Podcast on Facebook. Let us know if you would like to be the recipient of them.
Or if you know who you would like us to post them to.
Yeah.
There we go. I was going to send them to David Flatman.
Okay.
All right.
There you go. So we were talking about Exeter and Elliot Daly at 15.
Yeah. Mm.
That try was superbly taken. It was almost like schoolboy, where a little bit similar to the Manu Tuilagi, where you break one tackle and it just opens up and the player's got the pace to finish it off.
Well, I guess a lot of these defenders are quite frail, really, because everyone's got a job. You're stretched thinly. And if you miss that tackle, if you just miss that one thing, you know, it all opens up.
All right, so on what you've seen from the first two rounds, pick your England back three.
Only going on those performances.
No, but I mean factoring in.
Okay.
What you already know, but having seen the first two rounds as well.
I'm trying to think who...
You've got South Africa this weekend. You're Eddie Jones. You're back three.
I don't think he does anything without Mike Brown. I think that's the cornerstone of his back three, regardless of what number shirt he wears.
I agree with that.
If his back three used Cornerstone, they would be incredibly well shaved.
Exactly.
Anyway.
I think Mike Brown at 15 for me. And we saw in the summer, he played very, very well, be it on the wing or at 15.
He did play well in the summer.
Yeah. He's still got it. So Mike Brown, I would have Johnny May, who scored... Did he score two tries this weekend?
He did score two tries. They're relatively easy tries. But yeah, he scored two tries.
And then... English wingers that have stood out.
I think I honestly can't see anyone surpassing the guys he's already got. I think Brown stays, even though he didn't stop Harlequins. Was he injured?
He was injured this week. He started last week.
Yeah, on the wing. So,
or at least he was named on the wing. Or did he actually play on the wing?
He played on the wing because
Aaron
Morris played at fullback, right? So Elliot Daly, I can't see past Johnny May. I mean, those are the three. They're just the three. No one's done anything good enough yet to say, okay, maybe he gets a start.
The guys behind him, Yard and Denny.
Nah.
Not of the same standard. Watson's injured. Noel's injured. Woodburn is now injured.
Broken jaw.
Rocco's
ready to go.
Did nothing.
The guys that
round were
in the last England squad were Nathan Earle, Joe Cook and a singer.
Oh.
So did,
no.
No. Okay, fine. There we go.
All static for me.
No, not a guy that I've particularly liked in the past, but he is getting a load of praise at the moment, and he's playing well. Would Matt Banahan ever get a return to the England squad?
I don't think so now.
Too old.
Yeah. It's not necessarily an age thing.
I agree it's not an age thing, but let's face it, it is an age thing. I mean, it wouldn't factor into my decision if I had to win a World Cup.
No.
And I don't think it'll factor into Eddie Jones' decision. I think he will pick the best people available. Would Banners get into... he wouldn't get anywhere near the Saracens starting lineup.
There you go. That's a guy who I'd like
Lewington.
To... Lewington.
So he took two tries very well last week. Bit more time in Saracens, maybe. Another Gloucester.
Three tries in two games for Lewington. It's not a shabby start. He just knows where that try line is, doesn't he?
Woodward's not a bad shout as well for the options in the back three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving slightly inside, man who definitely put his hand up was Slade.
Absolutely, Slade. Yeah. He was on the bench last week and came off the bench and played very well for Exeter in that second half.
Yeah.
When they dominated Leicester and then was outstanding. And the gas he had, both on the outside break for his first try and the interception.
Yeah, both of them where Juan de Jong gave him too much room on the first one and he took it. That was very, very impressive.
Yeah.
It's good because you've also got some Manu who... Obviously, as soon as he does anything good, he starts hitting the headlines.
As soon as you start talking about him for England, he breaks as well. We should stop.
But good point.
He scored a very, very good try.
That was an amazing try. And it wasn't the power, because we know about the power. That's always going to be there. It was the pace afterwards.
Yeah.
Have a look at that. I reckon Nicky Gonover could have caught him.
I was looking at it going,
was Nicky Gonover running full pace there?
Do you think Nicky Gonover likes defending that much?
Do you think he likes defending a full tilt, Manu?
I mean, I wouldn't blame him for jumping out of the way. I'd probably do one of my best and worst moments in rugby was playing against Bristol when they were like seriously good. With who were the guys? Ben Sternum was their number eight.
Ben Sternum, I've got a story about Ben Sternum.
More on that in a second. And Andrew Sheridan was transitioning between lock and prop. Yeah. He played both in the game that I played against him, and there was Gus Peashot, and it was that Bristol era. It was amazing times. Who was the winger?
Phil Christophers.
Phil Christophers was outside centre he's outside centre on that particular day.
For which game was this?
Bristol. Oh, it was the final week of pre-season against Newbury. Anyway.
I don't know the team sheet that much.
I just remembered why I haven't gone off in this. I remembered that this had a point. Now I'm completely
Hang on,
losing
so
it.
You played as Ben Sternum. It was Gareth Archer playing?
Gareth Archer was playing the second row, yeah.
Who else did they have? Gustin Peashot?
Yeah, Gus Peashot and Contepomi were playing.
They had Jason Little.
Yes, Jason Little was playing 12.
I think...
God, there's some names in that team, isn't there?
The guy who ended up being the Bristol backs coach and is now like a RFU coach, Paul Hull.
I do know him. I know him as a player.
Yeah.
Was Vaughan going there for a while, or was he Sale?
He was Sale.
He was definitely at Sale. I wonder if he was a Bristol for a while.
Might have been. Anyway, point being... I remember wishing I'd got out of Andrew Sheridan's way when he ran through for a try. I chased him admirably, got in front of him. I was running from the side, got him, and then basically it was like a steamroller going over something. He just flattened me, ran over me, and dived and scored. But which it was a good effort. But the thing was on the first week, the next week, someone sent me a Bristol program. Which the picture was Andrew Sheridan diving for try with me minced on the floor.
Oh, I tell you the other guys you missed out. Julian White.
Julian White played.
And the other guy you'd have missed out is the hooker, Mark Regan. He's a Bristol lad through and through.
He's a Bristol lad through and through.
He played for Bath.
I don't remember him playing. I think it was an Argentinian or something like that was playing. Anyway, it was good times.
Mm.
But point being... I wouldn't blame anyone for getting out of Manu's way or pretending like they're running full pace. But have a look again. Nicky Gonover.
Yeah, because he is quite fast, isn't he?
He's rather quick.
He is pretty quick.
Yeah. Do you think this sort of blows the lid off the idea of Newcastle going back into the top four?
Well, two games, two
Two losses, fairly heavy losses.
To be fair, on the opening day, before a ball had been kicked or a pass had been made, Dean Richards said if they manage top six this year, he would be absolutely delighted. So I think he was tempering expectations from the off and recognises that Newcastle were the beneficiaries of a lot of bigger teams with bigger resources underperforming massively last year. So
yeah, because everybody's good this year. I mean, that's what strikes me. So far, there are teams that are not performing as well as the sum of their parts, but they're still bloody good. And I just wonder if Newcastle had a few games which could have gone against them last year, go for them, and this year it won't happen.
So who are the winless teams?
It's Newcastle, Worcester,
Newcastle,
Bath.
Worcester, Bath.
But Bath drew, obviously, against Gloucester, 31-all.
Mm.
But they are winless.
So, yeah, Bath is an interesting one because...
Oh, hold on, Ben Sternham.
I can't. I thought about this and I can't.
All right.
I'll tell you after.
Well, I'll tell you what that will be. That will be one for the next live pod. You can come up and buy JB a beer and tell me about Ben Sternham. How many times have you been asked about Ellis Genge?
Too many.
It's crazy.
Oh, did you see him on Rugby Tonight?
It was brilliant.
Yeah, he was good.
Really good. The baby rhino. I've also a lot of people have tagged me in the last few days on an Ellis Genge video of him downing a pint, which
good,
which is decent. It's decent. Decent. It's a solid pint.
Yeah.
And Andy Goode is going, hey Jim Hamilton, maybe we better get him involved. I reckon he might have you on a pint. And then they're sort of going, oh, you know, who's got the quickest pint in rugby?
When you say us, you mean Tim.
Tim. Closely followed by me, I might
add. Yeah, I just want to...
Genge is probably comparable to you. It was a good pint.
Reasonable.
Yeah. I want to knock this on the head once and for all. Right.
You have a world record for a reason, Tim.
I have the Guinness world record for downing
the Guinness
pint for a reason. They wouldn't let you do it with Guinness. It had to be with water.
I guess that is comparable, like, to, you know, how quickly could you drink a pint of morphine or something? They don't want to encourage that sort of behaviour.
Yeah.
Eight shots of petrol.
So if they're worried about not advertising Guinness by necking a pint, not advertising alcohol by necking a pint of Guinness.
In the Guinness Book of Records, yeah.
But you can advertise Guinness by calling it.
Exactly right.
It's more people.
Oh, we got sent a link the other day, me and Phil. Like, I didn't read it all because I'm lazy. And if it's anything like over 100 words, I can't be bothered with this.
I did read it all. I know what you're going.
It was a drinking contest from the 1970s?
Late 60s, I think it was.
And tell me about that in a second. I just want to make the point. Yeah. So, like, Andy Goode, love him. Jim Hamilton, great. Stop talking about downing pints and who's quickest. Uh-oh. You're all slower than me.
Feud.
And that's it. End of. You're all slower than me. By all means, take on the champ. But as long as you know who the champ is.
I think this is beef too far for us.
This is the kind of beef that I can get involved in. I'm happy with this.
Anyway, what was this drinking competition?
Yeah. So it's 1970s. Right. Now, the beer, the weapon of choice, the beer of choice was... something tartan.
Yeah. It was a brewery.
It was a wonderfully old school name. And the winner, how many pints did
you drink? Like a tartan best.
So yeah, blonde or something. Or tartan best
or something like that. And it was a bitter. And it was, they had 1 hour. The way they described it was they had 1 hour. There was something like 20 competitors.
And at the half, you were going to say 20 pints then. Yeah.
Well, wait for it.
1 hour, 20 competitors. At the halfway stage... the bookies started offering odds on who was going to win based on their performance in the first half. And there was a couple who were... It was 11 or 12 pints after
just
half an
hour. Just to give you an
idea.
Is it who can get the most in without...
No sickness. Yeah, you can't be sick.
Oh, my God.
No toilet breaks.
Just to give you an idea of how quick the tempo was of the drinking, it was similar to you when you heard there was free Guinness in the Irish consulate. It was up there with that kind of speed.
And the winner, I think it was 17... or 18 in an hour.
How can you not expel anything?
There was a video of this, and the winner didn't really know he'd won. Put it that way. It was a remarkable...
Because he must have just spent a month in the desert, crawling on his hands and knees.
They did say, actually, that he'd been eating...
salt?
Yeah, salt beef or something like that. For that, like, he'd not had a drink and been eating salt beef for 24 hours beforehand. so he could have.
We used to play Centurion in university. So you used to have to pay like a tenner to get into Steam Rocket in Bristol. And
Centurion, is that one shot every minute for 100 minutes?
Sorry, 100 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was near enough impossible.
Well, a shot of beer, not a shot of, obviously.
Yeah. And that was
drink responsibly.
Please. Exactly.
Please drink responsibly.
And that was near enough. I mean, it's such an amazingly quaint thing, isn't it? Just a noble, innocent drinking contest with 17 pints. William Hague couldn't have done that.
Well, no, I'm not up for that.
Well,
no.
If you wanted to know another way that the times have been changing, listen to this. This is ridiculous. Ridiculous. So
I've got no idea where this is going, by the way.
You won't believe this, right? But I was on Twitter before, and I got outraged.
Yeah. What?
You?
Yeah. You?
No.
Yeah. I'm not having that.
No.
True story, I was outraged because of this tweet. You ready for it? It's come from Cranley School Rugby. Roslyn Park Sevens, under-18 winners, 2016, 2017, Joseph's winners, blah, 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 blah. Basically, they're good. Very good. 19 teams, 38 coaches, 341 players strong. These guys are a serious rugby school. Here's the tweet. Hold on to your hats. This 15 season, we won't be publishing results via Twitter. We'll highlight standout and most improved performances, as well as lessons learnt, the week's highlights, 105 people's made debuts, team of the week, second 15, lessons to learn, let's get lower in the tackle. Hashtag chasing moments. Stop it. Stop it now.
What? They're not publishing
results.
They're
not putting their results up.
Do you know why, or are you just jumping to conclusions?
Well, I am jumping to conclusions. I mean, I'm reading what they've said here. They won't be publishing results because they want to publish highlights and standout and, you know, people that have improved. This seems to me utterly wrong and missing the entire point of rugby. You train to get better. You play to win.
Yeah, and I've had this put. I thought it was put really simply and really well on another podcast, JB. I know we both listened to Joe Rogan, and he was talking about mixed martial arts on one. And what did he say? He said, "I say to his kids to his own kids, it hurts when you lose, so it feels good when you win."
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a yin and yang. You
need to lose.
Yeah.
You need to lose badly and humiliatingly, and it needs to hurt because that's how you get better. And it should be on Twitter. It should go to the widest possible audience when you get things wrong because that's how you get better. I've been in some awful teams, and when you get that first win, it's better than the winning season that you have. It's just how it goes.
Or if you get run over by Andrew Sheridan, you go, right, I'm getting in that gym and...
All right, Tim, and a thermal brax.
And next time you're going to smash him, right,
yeah.
Tim?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And how did that work out for you?
Not so well, mate, not so well.
It blows my mind that would be their
that's
attitude.
That's a shame.
Isn't it? It just shows that...
Well, I bet that's got nothing to do with the rugby people. That's to do with the sociology department of the school.
I don't know, you know. Yeah, I mean, there is...
Surely this is just a Twitter thing, and they're... Because those lads will be celebrating their wins.
Of course they will. Of course they will. They will.
It's not the only metric, but it's...
I mean, they don't keep score in junior rugby, which I think is ridiculous.
The same thing goes, you can enjoy and take processes and learns out of defeats. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And also, isn't the point of getting better to figure out what the other team are doing so you can win? It isn't... Right, it is not about the taking part. When you're playing a game, it's about winning. Now, that doesn't mean you are only coached to win rugby. It means you're coached to improve as individuals and as a team. But when you play, it's to win. That's it. That's the whole point. The whole point of the whole game. Unless it's a friendly or a pre-season.
Oh, dear.
So on that sad note, let's lighten things up a little bit.
Yeah, go on.
It's dead.
I've got a little quiz.
Oh,
I've
lovely.
Got not just a quiz, the return of rugby social.
Oh, bring it on.
Wonderful.
Didn't we at one stage have some music for rugby
we
social?
We did.
Let's not get into the music.
Okay. Right.
So JB's electrical sockets are melting currently. Anything else will just overload it.
Exactly.
So, I've got four questions. If we get to it, there'll be a tiebreaker.
That's the way stuff goes. Nice round number four.
Nice round number, because I got bored after four. well, actually, I only wrote three, and then I saw something that was so good I had to put it in there, so we've got four now.
Ooh. Excellent.
So
this is Phil trawling rugby players' social media feeds?
Mostly Instagram, actually. Which is, so I'm not on Instagram other than to catch up on what various different rugby players did last night. Yeah. And maybe what some of their girlfriends are doing. Yes. So, first question.
Is Alex Lazowski, anyway?
Lazowski?
Yeah, is he all right?
Has he got an interesting missus?
No, I didn't say that. I just said, I asked about him.
How is he?
Just asked how he's getting on.
Ah.
No, it's fine. It's all right. It's good.
Interesting. Maybe something to look up later. Okay, so I'm going to give you three options for each question.
Yes.
Tim, you get first pick on the first question. Jay, first pick on the second question.
Understood.
So, first question. Which Sale Sharks player has recently started advertising pyramid scheme Herbalife on Instagram?
Pyramid scheme. It's not a pyramid scheme. It's a... cascading financial triangle.
It's exactly. A tiered marketing scheme.
Yeah.
Who is it? Byron McGuigan, James O'Connor, or Marlon Yard?
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, James O'Connor hasn't got as much going on at the moment because he's injured. I'm going to say Marlon Yard.
Tim goes Marlon Yard. JB?
That's incorrect. From what I know, just thinking about the characters, Byron McGuigan.
Tim is correct.
What?
Marlon
Yard.
I would
never have thought that.
Get in.
There we go. 1-0. Let me put it on the board.
I mean, it was because when I was doing the chat before the game with him earlier, he started trying to flog me something. No, he didn't.
Did he interview Marlon today?
Yeah. He speaks very well, actually.
He does.
Yeah.
Question number two. What unusual medical intervention, I'm not sure intervention is quite the right word, but medical procedure did Sergio Parise have this week? Was it, and JB gets to go first on this, was it Botox, was it hypnotherapy, or was it leeches?
Oh, crikey. Botox.
I'm assuming it's something to do with the cauliflower ear and it's leeches.
No.
It's 2-0 to Tim.
Yeah! He had,
I don't know what it was trying to do. I think they were on his leg.
On his leg?
It might have been a dead leg.
I hate leeches. The whole thought of leeches just go through me.
I know. It's horrible. So Parise was being leeched. So 2-0 for Tim. Question number three. Yeah. Tim gets a first pick on this.
I'm sure there's a lot of people going, oh, I wish I could have been that leech.
Question number three. Gloucester scrum half, Callum Brayley,
yes,
got some attention this week by bringing his pet into training. But what was it? Was it a cockapoo, a micro pig, or a ferret?
Now, There was a ferret getting on a tram at Piccadilly Station earlier this week in Manchester.
Was it Piccadilly? It was a tram, but was it Piccadilly? Did we get to the end of that, did we?
It was Piccadilly in the end of it, yeah. That's a bit too hipster, so I'm going to go with the dog.
Micro pig. Give me micro pig.
It's 2-1.
Yes!
Is it a micro pig?
Yeah. A micro pig.
Callum Brayley's got a micro pig.
From the picture, it looked like quite a big micro pig. It might have been one of those that was sold as a micro pig.
Yeah, yeah. There's a piglet. Just a piglet.
Yeah,
it's fully grown.
Oh, I should have known. It's Gloucester, isn't it? It's farming.
Farming land.
Farming land.
Right.
Probably end up in someone's smoker sooner rather than later.
So JB gets first pick on this.
Here we go.
The final question before the tie break. Final question is, which Leicester Tigers player drew smiley faces on the underside of his toes after the Newcastle win? Was it? Is it genuine? He had a family of 10 smiley faces on the underside of his toes. Was it Ben Youngs? Was it Manu Tuilagi? Or was it Ellis Genge?
Has to be Manu. Because Ellis is injured. Ben Youngs hasn't got that sort of banter going on. Manu, yeah, Manu.
JB says Manu.
I can't just say Manu and...
You can't say Manu.
No. Ben Youngs.
Neither of you are correct.
It's Ellis Genge.
Was, of course, fan favourite, Ellis Genge.
Ellis Genge drew a smiley face on the underside of his toe.
Of every single one of his toes. And then waved both sets of his feet, his toes, at the camera.
Wow.
Oh, God, love him.
What a great guy.
Oh, by the way, on that, like, writing stuff on yourself, you've noticed the tape around the wrist and people writing stuff on their wrist.
I know
a
where
bit
it's
more.
Going.
Quite often there's a cross
or
a name of a daughter or son or something like that. And then, did you see what Ronaldo Bothma had on his?
Yes.
Well, is it Smash?
Smash.
No, it's so Namibian, isn't it?
Oh, by the way, in that same game, because there was a bit of giggling in the commentary box when he said Smash, and Austin made a joke about he's got the bangers and the onion gravy, he just needs something to go with it. It's his shopping list. But the big laugh.
Oh, no.
But the big laugh. Was after Sam Vesti.
Oh, I don't want to talk about this.
Oh, God, this does make me feel a bit queasy. This makes me more queasy than... I'd rather be leeched than watch this again.
Yeah, it's not...
If you didn't see it, Sam Vesti eating his bogey, caught on camera, live on the... You can't recover from this as a, 40-year-old man?
Well, you can, actually. Well, you know how?
He's going to be hammered for it by his
good example,
teammates.
The very good example is the... German football coach.
Oh, Joachim Löw.
Yes, Joachim Löw.
He did the same thing, didn't he?
Well, it was not quite the same thing. It was...
he did do that.
He inspected it first.
Did he do that?
I've
not seen that one. I've seen the other one that he did.
What was that?
Can we not talk about
Where he had a little rummage and a sniff.
That is...
You've got to re-rack the balls and...
Yeah, just adjusting yourself is absolutely... I mean, try not to do it in public, but adjusting yourself
sometimes
is fine.
You need to re-rack, but re-rack and sniff is not on.
It's not...
And a bogey and chow down on it is not on. You know, Joachim Löw ate his bogey, but he inspected it first.
Oh. I mean, these people, how do they think they can get away with these things when there's
how
cameras
do you think
everywhere?
You can't talk about it? Stop talking about it.
Which leads us nicely on to professional rugby players who think they can get away with things when cameras are everywhere.
I know where this is going.
Mathieu Bastereau.
What an idiot.
So stupid.
This is the red card for him for Toulon against Cast.
It was Cast.
Yeah.
Which Toulon won by 1 point, their first win of the season. But player on the floor, on the wrong side, but he's getting out the way, and Bastereau dives in with a swinging arm to the head, basically.
Drops a shoulder, swings the forearm in when he's on the deck. Yeah, it's such a cheap shot. And like you say, with cameras everywhere.
I understand the red mist coming down, but that is just such a brain dead, such a stupid thing to do.
If you're going to have like a little cheap shot, like again, the fact that I don't know for sure whether he did or didn't, TJ Perenara in tackling the Argentinian winger looked like he sort of clocked him on the face with his foot, but... If he deliberately did it, which it, you know, he'll say he didn't, and it could well not be. At least he did it. He disguised it very well. So cheap shots will go on, but the art of it is not being seen, not being caught.
Yeah.
This was so obvious and blatant and reckless.
Yeah, do it when there's lots of players around. If you're gonna do that kind of cheap shot, do it to get away with it.
Is Bastereau basically the French Ashton? Phenomenally talented, should be top of their game. Just carries on getting caught with stupid stuff.
There's a little bit of that. I am glad that stuff like this happens every now and again from the point of view of it's a reminder of what happens in the amateur game every Saturday.
Yeah.
Not when Talk H play. We are squeaky clean, in fact. Picture of us here helping out the opposition. Would that see it?
Helping an old lady cross the road.
Look at that. That's,
and then sweeping the changing rooms.
Someone helping him very carefully around the neck?
Talk H players giving Liverpool St Helens player a little bit of a stretch.
Cramp.
Look at that. Aren't we lovely guys? And we train on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. at MMU 3G. If you want to know where that is, Platt Lane in Manchester.
Very good.
But yeah, there you go. What lovely guys. You'd love to be part of that group, yeah?
You sweep the changing room.
No, we have people to do that for us. We're incredibly middle class.
There you go. The other games that we've not spoke about. So we're not really touched on Friday nights. It wasn't a great game.
Two
teams trying to play rugby, and there were some glimpses of great rugby in there.
Was there?
There were glimpses. I mean, the opening 20 seconds when Tom Collins made that break.
I kind of think Tom Collins must be.
RC Tuala's break in the first half where he sized through, he runs laterally, then sized through, gets stopped, a great Marcus Smith tackle.
That was like an NFL running back running along the scrimmage and darting through a gap that had opened up. It was a
that play beautifully summed up the game, because brilliant bit of individual skill from RC Tuala, exceptional tackle. Northampton recycle the ball, and Fish, the hooker, passes it to the feet of Bigger, who knocks on. So, like, from the sublime to the just awful.
In fact, the first and last games of the Gallagher Premiership weekend were disappointing quality overall in terms of the execution.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, and I'd mention the Worcester Sale game, which Worcester in particular, I was just disappointed at their lack of ambition. Their tries came after 20 or 30 phases because they never seem to want to go. They've got some really talented outside backs, but they never seem to want to spread the ball. They just wanted to go one phase, one ball out, one man out, one man out, one man out.
Dan Bigg is an interesting one, right? What do we think of him 2 weeks into his premiership stint?
He's still finding his feet with the team around him. Mm. He's done some very, very good things. I thought he played well. He didn't play particularly well in the first game, but he was behind a struggling pack.
He's amazing. What I love about Dan Bigger is he's basically Martin Johnson, but in a tiny body. I mean, like, his attitude and his leadership, he's so angry all the time. He's just so competitive.
I love that side of him.
Yeah, I mean,
I love that.
I mean, it's almost like he wins by force of will, because he's not Danny Cipriani, is he? He can't do half the things that Danny Cipriani can do.
Not in terms of his George Ford. Yeah, to mention it, like his line break ability or anything like
but
that.
But I would take Dan Bigger in a World Cup final over either those two, probably.
Well, he went on the Leinster, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And those two didn't.
Those two didn't.
I mean, maybe Leinster wouldn't be the right place for him because, well, there's only three tests, but like in tournament rugby, he's just got such strong mental character.
He may not reach the completely mesmeric heights that some players do in terms of individual plays or moments,
yeah.
But he also never drops below a certain threshold as well. And that's exactly what Northampton needs.
He's got the attitude of Martin Johnson with the passing ability of Martin Johnson.
It's interesting. Courtney Laws and Dylan Hartley have both been involved in two consecutive games for Northampton, and look at the difference.
He did make a difference when he came on.
Really
Hartley.
Did. And Courtney Laws is playing brilliantly.
They're two best players, isn't it? And they're two highest paid players, probably.
Yeah.
Brousseau does not look like a guy who's adjusted to the Premiership too well yet.
He's trying very hard. Almost
very
too
hard.
Almost too hard.
Haskell looks good, though. Haskell looks like a cracking signing for them.
And again, having worked with him on Saturday once again, just and you guys know this from we've been lucky enough to get into some situations where we're either talking with a commentator or a referee or a
journalist,
an ex-player or a journalist or whatever. And we're so lucky, the game of rugby. And the fans as well. We go out for a podcast and we could be stuck on our own.
Yeah, we can happily go out for a podcast and not worried about getting shanked or anything.
No.
It's
amazing.
Nice set of
a bunch of rugby fans in a pub, and if you're on your own, we've still had a good time. Or whether you meet a current England international and he's humble and charismatic and friendly, and I'm forever grateful that I went along to a rugby club when I was 6 years old or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Love it.
Completely agree.
I did like Haskell when he kept saying "we" for Wasps
in the halftime breakdown. Yeah, well, he's been a Wasp since he was an academy player.
And
he was a
Black Ram.
Yeah,
and a Stade Francais, and the Highlander.
And then a Wasp again.
And then a Wasp again.
I mean, yeah, he's primarily a Wasp, isn't he? I think he'll end up going back there in some capacity. I can't imagine what. I don't think he'll be coaching, but I can see him being like something there.
I'd be interested to see what he does after the World Cup.
Well, he's in the Times today, in the money section.
Really?
Yeah, like all the things he's got off, you know.
Oh, right, as in an interview with him.
Yeah, yeah.
Supplements, yeah. Gyms,
Bodyfire is one.
Yeah. DJing
is another. That's got to be the most fun.
DJing.
Yeah.
Nutrition is a whole big thing.
Yeah, he's got a book, hasn't he?
And then he'll,
nutrition book.
If he wants to be an analyst or a pundit, I'm sure he'll be excellent at that as well. He's
definitely
a really good rugby brain.
One of the next ones to become the next wave of pundits. There's no two ways about that because he's so good on TV and he's very, very knowledgeable. So,
I'd be interested to see him get maybe a couple more years of rugby somewhere else. Maybe France, maybe Japan.
I think this is World Cup and he's packing it in.
I suspect he will do because he's got so much else on. But I'd just like to see him because he's one of those players who has already done it all.
Do you know what though? I can see Northampton going back to him and saying, here's more money, please stay. Yeah. Because they'll realise his value. You don't realise his value until he's in your club.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, the first and last games were disappointing. Some absolute blinders in between.
So I've been talking, haven't I, about who's going to be fired. Obviously, Eddie Jones is going.
So
Matt O'Connor has gone.
So last week we did a Twitter poll to say, after one game, who should get fired? Matt O'Connor. The poll was 56%, or maybe even more, Matt O'Connor. Less than 24 hours later, bang, gone. I'm tempted to start another Twitter poll.
Well, no, because the guy I'm about to mention is Todd Blackadder. Mm. Okay, I was convinced when Gloucester were 3 tries up, this is the end of Todd Blackadder. There is no coming back from this.
21-0.
And I changed my mind on Bath. So last week I said Gloucester are going to win this. Midway through the week, I was like, actually, no, I think I'm wrong. I think that there is enough in that Bristol game to suggest what they're going to try and do next week. And they've got enough players who are good enough that they can execute it. So I actually went back on myself and thought, no, Bath will win this. And at 20-0 or 21-0 down, I was certain, absolutely 100% certain, Todd Blackadder has now lost his job. There's no way he can keep his job be nilled in a West Country derby.
Yeah.
And then somehow they kind of clawed it back. I don't think they're going to be happy with the draw, but it's definitely a stay of execution.
Well, to be winning on whatever it was, 77...
21-0 down, and then they were 31-24
up with 2 minutes left on the clock.
Yeah.
But it was interesting the way they came back because they scored... Rocco scored, which was a very well-worked try.
Yeah.
Good pass. It was Burns, wasn't it, who floated the pass out. But it was phase after phase that got them into the right territory. Then they had the scrum. They scored the try. And then immediately, bang, straight after half-time, was the Banner's mistake to pass to Jamie Roberts, which gave them the territory. And then it was the overthrow straight to Tom Dunn.
Yes.
The Gloucester overthrow on their own 5-metre line. Tom Dunn picks it up and falls over the line. So that got them right. That turned it from 21-0 to 21-14 or 21-12, whichever it was.
That's one of those heartbreaking mistakes at the back of the lineup. But what I think about Bath going forward now is, think about Leinster, right? What do you think of when you watch Leinster? Or how would you describe their style of play?
Power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In one word.
Yeah.
First and foremost, have to use one word.
They're brutal.
That's probably it. Yeah.
And I thought against Bristol, I could see some of that brutality, particularly in the first 20 minutes. They're running over players. They look, absolutely devastating. And I think that's sort of the foundation that Gervin Dempsey is trying to build. And I think that's what's going to keep Todd Blackadder in a job at least till midway through the season, unless it goes horribly wrong. Because Matt O'Connor could not point to a single area where the team has improved or is getting better, or there is no hope for the future there whatsoever. It was kind of a shot to nothing. Whereas at least I think Todd Blackadder can say, look, we've got this attack coaching. This is what we're trying to do. You can see glimpses of it. And if they do establish that power game and they've got the boys to do it, they are going to be frighteningly good. Because if they can get that bit, and then you add, the Cockney Singers, who I don't particularly rate, so I won't go with him. In fact, I'll add, Rocco's, Jonathan Josephs,
Anthony Burns. Watson.
Yeah, all of a sudden, if they can do everything, they're not looking dissimilar from Leinster.
it's nice to emulate, try and emulate. They have got an amazing, amazing squad.
They have.
They're just not getting the best out of it.
It's interesting you talk about Leinster and stuff, and looping back to Leicester, that's one thing that has been said a lot since Matt O'Connor's left, is that for some time now, Leicester haven't had a sense of identity in how they play the game. And there was that sort of conflict when there was the major Cockerell thing between the traditional forward oriented game and but we want a bit more of the attacking stuff, and then they brought all those guys in the back line, Ford and May, and Vianney was there and all the rest of it, and you thought, well, they're going for the, and they never really addressed the forward issue, and it's still, that's where I want to see how, what's Leicester's identity. But you're right with Bath, at least, although it's not as what's the word, fluent as yeah. they would want, there's clearly a sense of identity. Yes, yeah, exactly like Leinster, we've got firepower where we need it, but we are going to batter it. We're going to just try and batter you.
And I think that, yeah, Jamie Roberts is kind of, all of a sudden makes a lot more sense over Ben Tapoy now. And I've got a feeling if they get on that front foot, they're going to be one hell of a team. I've gone full circle on Bath. But it depends.
That's not like you.
Yeah, it's not like me. Exactly right. But it does depend if they can get this power balance right, and if they can start dominating collisions, which you can't you, when you've got Toby Fallisau on your team and Dave Atwood and...
Do you know what you described? Right. What you described, Saracens, right?
Exactly.
Huge ball carriers in the forwards. Really tough inside centre.
Yep.
Like a big rod of iron there in the middle of the field. Defensive captain and just a unit. And then absolute gas out wide.
Yeah. So, watch it. I mean, it's too early to call yet. I still think Bath fans should be very worried, and it's going to be a rough old ride for maybe next 6 or 7 weeks. But if they go on this steady progression, they might be all right. In fact, they might be really, really good. I don't know. It's kind of like we said. So actually, I've gone full circle, but I actually ultimately agree with myself with what I said at the start of the season, which is they could be really good or really bad. They've got the biggest range of any team where they could end up.
I do agree with that.
Yeah, that's another way of saying I'm just sticking with what I originally said.
You were right.
As
always.
You mentioned Leinster, Scarlets, handy win for them. Do you know what? I think, in fact, on the Gallagher Premiership, I think if anyone had listened to our predictions and put a bet down, the Bath-Gloucester draw would have been the only reason why they wouldn't have got... In fact, I think out of the first two weekends, you and I, Phil, definitely... I've got 11 out of 12. The only one we haven't got is...
Was a draw.
I think we went all the same on the mall, actually.
Last week we did. The first week, as I reminded you last week, you picked Worcester to beat Wasps.
Oh, I'm so
And they nearly
close.
Did.
So close.
Even with 22 penalties conceded, they nearly did.
I'll keep reminding you of that every...
So that would have been some tidy accumulator money if you'd have almost delivered, thanks to Bath. So anticlimactic draws, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because particularly Bath, like, oh, they've got back. Gloucester were ahead all that time, and then they rescued a draw.
I tell you what looked great about that game, the game in general. That crowd looked amazing.
Yeah, it did.
It looked absolutely epic.
And it was quite cool having the burger van on fire.
Yeah, they should set fire to more burger vans.
Yeah.
it was, you were thinking, because at that point it was 21-0 as well.
I like the fact Bath are so committed to nutrition education among their fans.
They just burn it.
Anything, that's too unhealthy, burn it.
Nick Mellon's call it? A conflagration? Or something?
It was something.
There's a conflagration in... Conflagration? I can't even know the word.
Love it.
In the corner, which baffled Austin Healey.
Yeah.
What? You mean a fire?
Yeah, conflagration.
Conflagration. That's the one.
An extensive fire which destroys a great deal of land or property.
Well, add that.
So maybe it's not big enough to be described as a conflagration.
He knows what conflagration means, and he can also describe Sinotti as a rolling ball of barbed wire.
Well, why don't we add that to the Egg Chasers online dictionary alongside decimated? Conflagration.
And thank you for everyone that just sharpened. I was almost there with what decimation meant. It was if a battalion or whatever the Roman legion lost a battle, 1 in every 10, they would all be lined up and 1 in every 10 men would be killed.
Makes sense.
Natural selection.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, kind of not natural, but... here's a type of selection.
Here's one question. Had Serena Williams been a rugby player, what would have happened?
If she called... Well, we've seen what happened.
Yeah.
Because Dylan Hartley received a red card for calling
Wayne Barnes.
I find this one of the most disgraceful episodes in recent sport.
Yeah.
I mean, she has... Not, this wasn't your question, but this is...
I think answered.
She has bullied a referee. She has used her power to undermine him. She has then continued the feud afterwards. She's not given any credit to her opposite number, who beat her fair and square. She's called the referee basically a cheat. Well, a thief is a cheat.
Thief.
Yeah, thief and a liar.
Yeah, and then she's gone down the road of saying things like, you know, I want to make a better society for my daughter. She's absolutely...
Oh, did you not know she's the only person to ever become a mother?
I heard that. I heard that. I thought, this can't be true. Because there's not been a new mother, has there?
No, it's true. 20 years. She's the only person to have become a mother.
I mean, I'm not going to say she's... She's incredibly entitled. I mean, that's the thing. She's incredibly entitled. She will earn something. Her net worth must be multiples of thousands more than that empire who she decided to menace and label a sexist and everything else. It's absolutely horrendous, actually.
Well, JB, don't forget, what she said is that afterwards... So this is, in the heat of the moment, people can do stupid things. The England captain, as you said, called the referee a cheat and got a lengthy ban, which kept him out of... Was that the Lions tour?
Lions.
Him out of a Lions tour. So, you know, he had to live with the consequences, and you do. And I think the answer to the question is, and again, another reason I'm proud of rugby, is... On things like this, the book comes down on you.
If you question
the integrity of officials, that is a value that rugby has always held and continues to. With the game moving on, I love the fact that a player could expect a significant ban.
Yeah, I'd like to see it be banned for the next few. I mean, it'll never happen because she's the sport's top draw. But I imagine that's exactly why she felt entitled enough to go on her little rant, and she felt entitled to that Grand Slam. That's how it was. She just looked spoiled and pathetic.
Well, she said it was about... she said afterwards. So in the heat of the moment, people do things. She said afterwards that it was... She's doing it for women everywhere. It's about women's rights.
Except for the woman she's playing against. Yeah. Well, who then lost her Grand Slam title.
That was incredible. So her post-match interview, the statement she made was, I've never seen that umpire dock men any points for calling him a thief. Well, how many men have called him a thief?
Yeah, exactly.
None? So he's not docked them any points?
I hope she's banned. I really hope that she's banned. I think it's awful.
But in rugby, male, female, and the women's premiership and
began
this weekend. Premier 15s. That began this weekend. I think in women's rugby, in men's rugby, it would be a significant ban.
Absolutely, and it should be.
Didn't win Saracens up this neck of the woods this weekend against
Waterloo?
Waterloo, yeah.
I saw that.
They're the current champions.
It'd be pretty cool to live near Waterloo because that's in the middle of like a...
I love that club.
Amazing, it's a cool club. Housing estate.
Nice little pavilion.
Yeah, oh, the pavilion's amazing.
Lovely pitch with a nice stand. Yeah, I love
playing
there.
Because you have to walk through it, don't you? And there's a little drum on the top.
It's a proper rugby club, that. Was that Ben Kay and Austin Healy's club?
It might have been at one point.
I think it was.
I'm not sure what level they're at now. Maybe level 5?
Yeah, about that.
Level 4, level 5.
Really good club.
Yeah, it'd be cool because like you literally get... You know, no one really knows about Waterloo Rugby Club in the men's world. But in the women's world, they're an absolute top team. You could literally just wander around and watch Saracens versus Waterloo play on a Saturday afternoon, which is bloody brilliant.
Good stuff.
There you go.
Sorry, I didn't mean to take us off in that, but I thought...
No, it's great.
And I'm glad we
get some criticism for that, because Dan Carter's one who he's tweeted... I've just closed it down. He's tweeted how immensely proud he is of both women.
But why? I mean, it just shows...
I'm just upset they published the result.
I'd rather they
publish the, you know, what learns have you made, Azarka.
Do you know what? I do worry about the so-called journalists that tweet things like...
So careful now, Jay.
Yeah. And there are a few of them tweeting about tennis, like, this is inspirational. And I just can't get my head around how broken your thought process must be to class that as anything other than brattish behaviour. I mean, my mind does not work like that. It's pretty basic, as you might know, pretty binary. There is no defence of it, let alone it being like inspirational or speaking for women.
From what I've seen, I simply can't see any defence for it.
No.
But then there was an article in the Times, apparently. I need to
no,
read
the
it.
The Independent, Jonathan Liu.
Oh, yes.
there was another part argument basically talking about broadcasting, sport broadcasting, and rugby and stuff being just too white, too male. My days might be numbered there. So.
Oh well. Get back to podcasting. I mean, that's exactly why podcasts will eventually take over the world.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
There we go. We've not yet touched on the Rugby Championship.
No, how did the London Scottish go?
Hey!
No, that's a serious question because I don't know.
34-26 loss to Ealing Trailfinders.
Hey, that's not a bad loss.
Yeah.
Well, not with the money that they're spending this year.
Yeah, I think our Championship coverage will mostly be London Scottish watch this year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, yeah, I've got skin in the game there, so...
I wonder if your brother says that about the podcast world. what were the other noticeable results from the Championship?
Which one? London Irish won again.
Okay.
52-20 against Nottingham. Carnegie beat Richmond.
Oh, 31-36.
Scottish Trailfinders, yeah.
Oh, is that London Scottish Ealing Trailfinders?
Yeah, I didn't know. 31-36.
Oh, that's... Oof, they could have really made a statement there.
Yeah, big time.
The other Rugby Championship...
Oh, sorry. I actually thought you wanted to talk about the Rugby Championship.
No, the other Rugby Championship. The Southern Hemisphere International Tournament.
Sorry. I'd much rather talk about Ealing versus...
We want to talk about those South American playboys and some of their incredible tries against the inevitable... oncoming crushing by an All Blacks side.
I didn't actually see this, so yeah, do you mind if I just nip up and grab myself a drink and you two talk about Rugby Championship?
Yeah.
No, go on.
Yeah.
Did you see this game, Tim?
No.
Are you prepped?
No, I didn't. I've watched highlights.
I guess you've been working.
Where do they keep getting these wingers from? Because, like, Imhoff is, you know, I just got used to knowing him, and then he was no longer in the Argentinian team. And
yeah, he was at Racing Metro.
And they don't need him. And then
Cordero.
And then Cordero came along. Then he's, what a player he looks at Exeter as well now. Now he's bedded in. So it was like, oh, great, yeah, cool. I know Cordero, fine, brilliant. And then he's no longer in the side. They just have this ridiculous conveyor belt of incredibly gifted wingers.
Yeah, and it was Delgi last week.
Yeah, with that run from under his own posts.
Yeah, and it was Moyano and Buffelli this week.
I'll have a drink as well, thank you.
Just got some waters.
As we said, drink responsibly.
Exactly.
You're not plugging anything here. This isn't.
No, this is just me drinking sparkling water.
Right. Fairborn Springs, refreshing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Ice cold.
It does feel like, you know, like a sitcom.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a 90s sitcom.
What are you drinking? James Haskell Body Fire.
Another
This Body Fire tastes delicious.
Is this... Is this water sparkling natural mineral water from the Fairbourne Springs?
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah, so...
Do you think what an unusual interlude.
Yeah. Do you think they missed a trick here, Argentina, by having loads of wingers? Whereas the All Blacks have decided, no, what we need is loads of fly halves.
Well, loads of fly halves and loads of...
Who can also play wing, by the way, yeah, should they yeah. wish.
Loads of fly halves. Although Moonga didn't have his best game, what they have got is abundance of very talented back rowers.
Yes, they do.
Man, they do as well.
Shannon Frizzell.
Who?
Shannon.
Okay.
Frizzell.
Great name.
Brilliant
put that,
name.
Put that in a men with women's names 15.
Yep. Yeah.
Highlanders, six slash eight slash second row. Was immense throughout it. Carried incredibly hard. Hit even harder. Scored a try as well. But just, I mean, 12 months ago, it was Vea Fifita who would have been kind of the fourth choice six. And now we've got this guy moving ahead of someone like Vea Fifita.
There was rumours of Fifita coming to Exeter on a short-term deal.
There was talks because he didn't make the... the All Black squad.
So I've got a question for you, right, about Exeter. I know we're talking about, you know, the greatest team in the world, but let's talk about Exeter, the other greatest team in the world, right?
Yeah.
What is the crack with their massive ginger flanker? Oh, hang on. He's gone to Saracens. I've got it the wrong way around.
Conlon.
Yeah. Somebody must love him. He's been at Exeter, who are no mugs, and now he's at Saracens, who are also no mugs, and he's been there for 2 years, and he doesn't get any game time. But he must be awesome in some respect.
He plays in sevens and the Anglo-Welsh Cup, or what?
Yeah.
I seem to think... So he's kind of just down the depth chart a bit.
I seem to think he had an injury last year, which might have been one of the reasons why we've not seen as much. But
I'm fascinated to know more about this guy. Anyway, sorry, you were talking about...
Yeah, New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand did the New Zealand thing, which it was a relatively close game. Argentina scored first through Moyano. Their other, so Delgi, Moyano, Buffelli.
Their other winger that you've never heard of, but is awesome.
But yeah,
again,
turning Moonga and TJ Perenara inside out for that first try. But then New Zealand just did what they do. They eventually got the foothold in the game. They got the territory, and when they get the opportunity,
so was it close up to the first? In the first half, and then he ran away in the second half.
How did you know?
Yeah, is that what happened?
Yeah. One of my favourite named players in world rugby is Geronimo De La Fuente.
Amazing name.
Love it.
It is an amazing name, isn't it? So, basically, it's exactly the same as every other All Blacks game. The guy that they brought in was amazing. Actually, no, Richie Amunga wasn't amazing, to be fair. But then they ran away with it in the second half.
Basically, yes.
Perfect.
And the Australian box game, yes, Australia's haircuts are getting worse.
But the home team won, just as we thought.
Well, the two fly halves was the battle of the worst possible haircut in rugby.
It really was.
With Kirtley Beale and Elton Yanchis playing 10.
Yeah.
Both playing
10.
That
is a true hold my beer moment. Like, Elton Yanchis has the worst hair in rugby. Kirtley Beale, hold my beer.
And I mean, to add to it, Faf at 9... His hair is astonishing.
Sorry? Faf's hair is flowing and beautiful.
Faf's hair.
He's got lovely hair.
He's remarkable. Would you like to have hair like Faf de Klerk?
If I had luscious blonde locks like him, if I was as genetically gifted as Faf de Klerk, if we
crowdfunded advanced hair studios.
if I could be more like Faf de Klerk and less like me, I would take it today.
Do you know what's going to happen? There was a guy on Celebrity Big Brother who'd had so many operations to look like the Ken doll.
Yes.
That's going to be you, Faf de Klerk.
Well, Faf de Klerk does look... There's something a bit odd about him. He does look like a doll of some sort.
No, he's like a dolphin. He just looks like a perfect human. There's nothing...
He looks like a doll that would, like, creep out in one of the Saw films.
Yes.
Before you get hacked to pieces.
He does have that sort of... Very nice. Lots of energy. That's what I'm going to say. I'm sure his favourite saying is 100%. 100%, boys. 100%. 100%, boys.
Australia snuck it in this game. Partly helped. So Matt Tamua played very, very well. After 2 weeks ago, he was in Australia. Last week, he was in Exeter.
What do you reckon?
This week is in
Australia.
Do you
think the Australian Rugby Union or Leicester or Matt Tamua are getting his air miles points? It's an important question.
Yeah, someone is, aren't
they? Someone's getting some upgrades.
What do you reckon?
Air miles.
What do you reckon he's watching on Netflix? I'd love to know, because he must have gone through a lot of it.
Everything. The whole thing.
If you've got any Netflix-based questions, contact Matt Tamua, because he's seen everything.
I expect he finds an hour or two to listen to this podcast.
Of our podcast account now.
Well, just tell him.
On Netflix, Matt?
Just ask him now. Matt, get in touch, because we know you must listen to the podcast on your journeys back and forth from hemispheres.
What a travel schedule.
Let us know.
So I wonder if that'll stop now, actually, because obviously there's a changing of the guard at Tigers.
Maybe. Well, they'll have another game next week and then maybe a 1 week rest. So we'll have to see. So he was man of the match.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicking sticks, at least early on. Oh, no, he's kicking sticks right throughout the whole thing, apart from Reese Hodge long distance penalty. Did you see his try? It was a similar one to the Tom Dunn try in the Bath game.
You just reminded me of another Nick Mullinsism when Daly kicked a
long distance
kick.
Long distance
lorry driver. Love it.
I do like the Stocky Little Dumper Truck.
Stocky Little Dumper Truck, that
was
it.
It's a very good one for Harry Thacker.
Yeah,
Tamua, he was gifted an over on your own 5 metre line, overthrow by the hooker, and Matt Tamua picks up and slides in. Classic.
Yeah.
Classic, and that was the difference between the two teams in the end. So, well done, South Africa.
Yes.
Anything else? You both seem to be running out of energy.
No, I'm just texting Matt Tamua.
What, to tell him well played on the...
seeing what he's watching on Netflix.
Tell him Phil says well played on the man of the match performance and nicely taken try.
On your what colour compression socks do you wear? And what have you been watching on Netflix in your 34 hours travelling?
Yeah.
Right, that's that done. Okay, let's do our predictions for next week.
But do we briefly need to touch on any of the Pro 14? We talked about Ulster and what a fantastic result that was. And in fact, I was going to say, gassy.
This amazing James Haskell sparkling water is making us all quite gassy.
Yeah.
Bodify of sparkling water. That's one game I have got in the calendar for the European weekend. I'm the Ulster at Ravenhill against Leicester. I'm so excited about that. I can't wait to go back there. I was just love that place. So, but
we need to get.
Yeah, we need to. So Ravenhill's somewhere I wanna go for an Egg Chasers trip.
Good fun night out.
Why do I feel like I'm missing something fundamental? Something really important.
Well, we have got the one trip lined up that we need to. So I've been phenomenally busy up to this point. Next weekend we are going to book our Marseille trip for the Rugby World Cup repechage.
Like
the Rugby World Cup repechage, yes.
Yeah. The last weekend, so it's there for three consecutive weekends, I think. So the last weekend we're going to go to.
What's the date?
It's the last weekend in November, so I think it's the 24th, 25th.
Which
weekend.
Means we can then hop on a train and go to World Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Boom.
23rd, 24th, 25th.
Are we needing some new tweed?
Of November. That weekend.
Right.
Okay. Excellent. And also.
Oh, your Benetton boys won as well.
Yeah.
Top of the league. 27-20.
Oh, yeah, we said that right at the start of the show.
Yeah, they battered Cardiff. Nothing sweeter than battering Cardiff.
By a point.
Of course.
Well, battering's a battering, mate. Yeah, they're doing well. They're doing really well. I'd love to go there and watch watch a game in Treviso.
Watch the boys.
Watch the boys.
Watch your boy, Ioane.
Watch the lads.
Ioane.
And, of course, Sale are off to Connacht, so that could be another one that we should go to.
Yeah, right. Next weekend, we won't do it on the podcast, we'll look at our travel plans.
What if I... Yeah, yes. Good thinking.
Oh, I'm free on that last weekend in November currently. Awesome. Game on.
Right. Predictions. So we'll quickly rattle through the Pro 12, Pro 14. Why do I still... I'm literally reading Guinness Pro 14 and saying Pro 12. So Friday the 14th of September, Edinburgh host Connacht. Connacht, who had a good, very good win.
Edinburgh are finally going to get a win.
I think you're right. Edinburgh should have beaten Ulster by all rights. After they threw it away in the same way that Gloucester did. who are massively ahead. So Edinburgh to win at home. Munster host Ospreys, which will be...
Munster
win. Leinster host Dragons.
Ooh, this will be close.
Leinster to bounce back.
Leinster definitely to bounce back. Then Scarlets host JB's beloved Benetton.
Scarlets did get a win.
Scarlets did. They've got
a lot of injuries, though.
They've got injuries, but they're getting players back.
Yeah, but Treviso are tough.
Treviso are tough.
Well, if you're a real fan, you know they're not Treviso anymore.
Okay.
Still calling Treviso.
Plus, I have to say, JB, you have picked a really good team to follow because it's... you can kind of... I was thinking this is a great way to have a... You could please the missus. Say, we're going to Venice. Why don't you stay? Why don't you go and do some shopping?
I'll nip
and
over.
Nip off. It's half an hour away.
It is.
Genius.
I think Treviso will win. I think they will go to Scarlets and turn them over.
Give me Scarlets.
Well, they beat Leinster at Leinster last year.
They've never won their opening two games. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And they've certainly never won their three opening games.
That's correct.
That's a fact.
They are making history.
Unfortunately, JB, I'm going to have to say I disagree.
No, hear me now, believe me later.
There we go. Cheetahs hosting Glasgow. So Cheetahs hosting Glasgow. Glasgow are in South Africa.
I don't know what squad they're taking out there.
Cheetahs, they have been struggling a little bit.
Have they played in South Africa yet?
No, they played two away games.
Yeah, well, that's their thing, though.
So I still think Glasgow are going to win that.
I don't see it.
They look good.
Against Munster.
Glasgow look really good.
Glasgow, great outfit. But Cheetahs... In South Africa, I mean, that's the whole point of them, isn't it? To win games at home.
Stuart Hogg, this is his last season at Glasgow, isn't it?
Do you reckon? Oh, yeah. Up to World Cup, I'd say. Yeah, definitely.
He'll be going huge, huge wedge
after that
to France.
Maybe.
Also, the Premiership.
Whoever. He would attract a decent wage because he's a very, very talented player.
Maybe Exeter are waiting for him.
Do you know who I think he will go to?
Exeter would be a great move as a permanent 15.
No, I tell you where he's going to go. Providing, you know, they're not bankrupt by this time next year. Wasps will lose Willy LaRue to Japan, and then that just makes too much sense.
That would make sense.
Oh my goodness, that would be ridiculous.
He's so waspy as well.
He's very waspy.
I'd love to see him at Exeter. I think he'd fit in.
Yeah, I'd like to see him at Exeter.
Anyway, so me and Tim are both saying Glasgow win.
Yep,
JB, you're saying Cheetahs.
I think Cheetahs.
And then Zebre host Cardiff Blues.
Come on, Zebre for me.
Which, Cardiff.
Yeah,
but
Cardiff, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you allowed, aren't they a bit touchy? Hey. Apparently they're a bit touchy about calling them Cardiff. They're the Blues.
Oh, who cares?
The
Blues.
We also have Rugby Championship.
Whoa, you missed one.
Did I?
Kings at Ulster.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Oh, that's because it's such a foregone conclusion.
Sorry, that's the Sunday game, isn't it?
The question doesn't need to be asked. It's Ulster to extend their lead at the top.
Yeah.
That should be on TV, right?
If you've got Premier Sports, I'll come round.
I do have Premier Sports, just purely for the Jim Hamilton highlight show. It's the only reason I have it.
I'll come round and watch it.
The Jim Hamilton highlight show or Ulster?
Preferably Ulster Kings. So that's all the Pro 14. Rugby Championship.
Nottingham, London, Welsh.
Good highlight show. London, not a very good pint.
Exactly.
Beef.
No, not at all.
In the Rugby Championship, not the Green King IPA Championship, in the Rugby Championship, New Zealand hosts South Africa, which I think is going to be probably the same as most New Zealand games. New Zealand to win by 20 points in the end. Mm-hmm. And Australia host Argentina, which will be an interesting game.
I think your point that you made before the tournament, where you said, apart from New Zealand, home wins. I'm just going to go with that.
Just stick with that. It's worked so far. I think it probably won't far off. I actually think Argentina probably not got a bad chance of upsetting Australia.
You reckon?
I just don't know how this championship's going to continue, you know. Because... all the stadiums are empty, except for the New Zealand ones, which aren't very big. Right, Australia just...
Well, the Argentinian stadiums are always
but they're rammed. I mean, they look like something from Mad Max, though, don't they? Lots of raw concrete and, like, you know...
yeah, but if you're selling
out 30,000... Would you prefer that, Mad Max raw concrete, or would you prefer the...
ultra-modern empty Australian stadium?
No, the one in Paris.
Oh, I love that.
The dystopian giant screen.
Yeah. I love like Blade Runner or something.
Well, I tell you my favourite rugby ground. And it's rugby league ground. It was the Willows.
Even more than the Wreck?
They were exactly... I rate them exactly the same, right?
The Willows was like sunk into the ground,
the
wasn't it?
Amazing.
The ground was like 20 feet below...
I don't think it was that, I mean, yeah, it was sunk. It was in the middle of a housing estate in Weest. Very similar sort of estates to the one you find in Bath.
Yeah, I was going to say, the state of the two grounds is a perfect reflection on the local demographic of Bath
and
Salford.
You think you've nailed it, really. That's what makes a ground great. Does it represent the local area?
And those two were...
perfect.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the Ravenhill Kingspan. I really love it. It feels part of that community.
Tell you what, go to Ravenhill.
Traditional.
You've been working, haven't you?
Yeah.
It's a great stadium.
It's brilliant. Great atmosphere.
Oh, the Willows. That was such a good stadium.
I've got the AJ Bell now.
I mean, the AJ Bell was built for Salford, so they could bin off the Willows. And the toilet was literally... the men's toilet was just literally a wall. It was a wall with a drain pipe.
A drain channel.
It was amazing.
I remember, I used to go as a kid. I used to have a season ticket for quite a few years. My old man's a Salford fan. And, yeah, it was basic. It was about as basic as you could imagine in a professional sporting
arena. I don't know how
arena.
It happened, right? But it did happen. I started following Salford City Reds when... I don't know how this happened. They managed to attract a record crowd of 11,000 people to watch...
11,000 hardy souls from the streets of Salford.
To watch Salford versus Warrington. It was something like 34-all. It was an unbelievable game.
Well, so because it's so close, so when I was a kid, Leeds, Wigan, Saints, Warrington would all bring... massive, like thousands, multiples of thousands of travelling fans.
You know, I feel like that. You know that picture of the Red Indian where he's looking over his lost land and a single tear rolls down his cheek? It's how I feel when we discuss the state of Salford City Reds now.
The mighty Reds. Well, they're top of the table in the middle eights at the moment.
Perfect.
Not that anyone cares. Right, so Rugby Championship, we're saying home win for Australia, win for New Zealand.
Yep.
And then the Prem. Right, me and you, Tim, need to continue our almost flawless
11
prediction.
Out of 12 so far.
Isn't that
11 and a half out of 12, I'd say.
Yeah.
11 and a half? You're not giving yourself a half.
For the draw?
No, absolutely not. You call it a draw or it's wrong.
Okay.
If it ruins your accumulator, it's not right, is
11
it?
And a half. 11.5.
I've got two wrong all season.
So, Friday night, Gloucester host Bristol. Bristol, who put in an excellent... we've not spoke about it, but an excellent...
The George Smith red.
What did you do for that red? I didn't see it.
It was soft.
Let me question it. Let me put this the right way. The referee decided it was, and with the TMO's help, that it was a high tackle that constituted a straight red card.
The referee and TMO said that first contact was shoulder to head. Which I'm not sure it was.
It really wasn't.
So Jackson's head did snap back because of the force of it, but I think it was shoulder to upper chest area.
When you see the reverse angle, it was like it would be like the reverse angle of a punch in Rocky, where Dolph Lundgren's head just flew backwards, and you think, "Wow, he's clearly walloped him there." But I'm not saying Jackson Rae faked it.
No, he didn't. Because
that's not the point. Clearly not. Of course he didn't. But he was hit hard. But It was not shoulder to head. I'm disappointed that was a red.
Yeah. But George Smith dealt with it very well.
He did.
He just walked off and then went to apologise to Pat Lamb.
Yeah, he did.
Which is an incredible
Serena
way
Williams?
Of dealing. Yeah.
Have a look at that. George Smith. There's a magnanimous athlete.
But they grew up with different life experiences, Tim.
And you'll note that it was a man that issued the red card as well. To another man, so there can be no sexism there.
Yeah, it does beg the question: why are we allowing women referees into rugby? Because it's surely just going to make more trouble for us.
More sexism.
It'd just be easier if we just eliminated all women's sport or all participation from rugby, and then we wouldn't have the tennis conflict.
And for anyone who might like to take that out of context, that was a light-hearted joke.
Yes, it was a joke. Yes, it was a joke.
So, Gloucester versus Bristol.
Gloucester at home, but I do like the cut of Bristol's jib. I really do.
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised, and I think in my head, most likely for the drop right now is Worcester. Mm. Although I am fully expecting this to flip a few times during the season, as it normally does. So yeah, Gloucester at home. Then on Saturday, are you working any games this weekend?
No, not this weekend.
So we've got Exeter versus Sale, which is going to be, as we said before, probably a fairly comprehensive home win.
Mm, yeah, sadly.
We've got Harlequins hosting Bath, which will be another interesting test.
That's a very big test.
It's an interesting test to see where they are. We said that Northampton Quins was going to be an interesting test, but we didn't really learn anything other than they both have individual brilliance, which we knew, and they're both not the complete article, which we also knew.
Quins are missing quite a lot of players.
Are they?
Yeah, well...
Brown.
Mike Brown.
Joe Marler dropped out before
kickoff. Joe Marler dropped out beforehand.
Matt Simmons.
James Horwill.
Yeah, Horwill was out. Simmons was struggling beforehand.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of
Luke
Australia.
Wallace.
They had a food bug, didn't they?
Did they?
Yeah, before the game.
Luke Wallace, Boise.
Yeah. Visser played A-League against Gloucester Monday night.
So you want to see an A-team, have a look at Exeter Chiefs A-side that played today against Bath.
The Braves.
Jack Knoll played.
Bloody hell.
there's some other players that I've totally brain-farted. Some serious players in that team.
We've got a serious squad.
Okay, so Quins versus Bath, what are you seeing?
Quins at home.
Yeah.
They always pull it out at home.
Give me Quins at home.
If Bath is serious, right? If they're serious, they're going to win this.
Yeah.
This is the ideal game to test where they're at.
Yes, you're right. Because Quins are one of those sides that are in that middle chunk of teams that are going to be jockeying for position, and Quins at home are a tough ask. So yeah, in terms of progression, Bath winning this one would be it would keep an upward trajectory from where they were on the opening day.
Yeah, yes, so correct.
Start of the season, the three games have been below the relegation favourites.
Oh, it's tough to call. I don't know.
At home. And now they've got to beat Quins away. And I think if they beat Quins away, I think you can expect some good things.
This is hard to call. I'm going to stick with Quins, but I think it's hard.
Bath.
So, yeah, sorry. So, in the Chiefs ace, the Chiefs Braves team, which played Jack Knoll and Michel Campagnaro in the back line.
Nice.
Dave Ewers.
Oh, bloody hell.
Ben Moon, all in the pack. James Short only on the bench.
Wow.
Yeah, they're a serious squad these
James
days.
Short on the bench for the A-team. Yeah. Me. Next game, Worcester and Newcastle?
Yeah, which I think Newcastle are going to win this.
I think Worcester will win that.
So Worcester, they did show some positive things in the first two games. As I said before, the bit that was a bit frustrating, they've got such good outside backs and they were just keeping it too tight. It was almost as if they were...
Well, when Bryce Heem scored, who was it that made the point? Like, the forwards aren't good enough, give it to Bryce Heem.
Well, at that stage,
probably got a good point.
But it felt like they were too afraid of losing to win, makes sense.
Yeah, I'm going to swap that around. I think Newcastle will win that.
Yeah, Newcastle are going to be hurting.
Newcastle will win.
Two losses there. We've got Northampton hosting Saracens, which I expect will be a fairly big win for Saracens. And Saracens to bring Billy Vunipola and Liam Williams off the bench, who scored four tries in the last 20 minutes between them,
amazing.
Admittedly against a depleted Bristol side. That is amazing. And then on Sunday, we have Wasps hosting Leicester.
This is a good game. This is a really tough game to call.
Yeah, this one. It's at the Rico.
This is another one to gauge where these teams are at.
Yeah, so I think that Wasps will be beaten by 2014-era Bath comfortably.
Ford and Eastman pulling the strings.
Exactly. Yeah, I think Leicester can win this. No, I'm going to go with Leicester.
I want to say Leicester as well. It feels like it was such a good performance by Leicester. And it's not just everything slotted into place. They were playing differently.
Yeah.
They were playing a different pattern, different game plan, controlled by George Ford entirely, that suits the way they want to play.
Wasps have got issues as well. Nizam Carr was already out injured.
Yeah.
Brad Shields.
Yeah.
Broken cheekbone.
Yeah.
Is a doubt for the autumn internationals now. Nathan Hughes went off and was icing his hamstring. You notice how I'm very, very knowledgeable on injuries to Wasps back row players. Could it be
specific
that I have,
ones?
Could it be that I have a couple of them in my fantasy rugby team?
Will be.
They've got Thomas Young out injured already. They've Alex Reid is out injured long term.
Tom Willis knee. Is it Jack Willis or Tom Willis?
Jack Willis
knee.
So they have issues and Vili Leroux, is this the game he comes back?
No, he's playing against New Zealand.
Again in my fantasy rugby draft team. Oh, man.
He's hardly playing until Christmas.
No, I'm sure Wasps have done a deal where they get...
Have they?
I think Wasps have done a deal where they'll have access to him. And it may well... Oh, I need to check this.
Right, you...
I still think Wasps at home.
Give me Leicester. I mean, I
want to say Leicester as well.
Yeah, the only cautionary tale I'll tell is Leicester looked amazing last year against Cast at home. Like, I thought, oh my God, this looked brilliant, and we never saw it again. And I hope this week isn't this year's version of Cast. Other than that, yeah, they can do it.
Tough fixtures to call.
Actually, I'm going to change my mind. I've only seen one good performance by Leicester, so give me Wasps.
Oh,
interesting. I'm sticking with Leicester. So, Helen, where are we different? I say Leicester, and I'm also saying...
Bath.
Look at that. Hear me now, believe me now. If easy money, follow my picks. Easy money.
There we go.
All right.
Right, I'm going to...
Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or egg10 at checkout. Fill your boots with that. Enjoy yourself on us. Have a great week of rugby and let the boys play.
The boys play.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.